You're listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, a weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht, Benjamin Pieske, and Sam Gardner, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients without becoming overwhelmed by work. Today, I am talking with my good friend, Stuart McGuire, and we are talking about the book Never Splits the Difference, a really, really life-changing book. So stay tuned for that. And now the music. Never Splits the Difference is a really, really interesting book. It is written by someone that has the experience of people that you usually only find in thrillers, action movies with Tom Hanks and whoever. But this is actually for real. So stay tuned for this really, really interesting episode. I'm producing this podcast in association with PSI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the video on demand content library, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. Visit the PSI website at psiweb.org to learn more about PSI activities and become a PSI member today. Welcome to another book review with Stuart. Hi, Stuart. How are you doing?
Hey, Alexander. I'm doing very well. Very well indeed. Still in lockdown, though.
Yeah. But today is bright blue sky outside, so my mood is pretty good, and it's great that the kids can play outside, that, you know, releases a little bit of the tension. Well, if you have boys.
we have been told by the government at this stage of lockdown that we may be able to return to school in the coming weeks. So there's lots of excitement amongst the parents of Britain. So,
Yeah. It's today, as we're recording it, it's 23rd of February. And in Germany, schools just opened partially again. But I predict they will close again before Easter.
Oh, goodness.
It's really interesting that there's so many scientists that say we need to be careful. The numbers go in the wrong direction. There's a pandemic within the pandemic with the new variations of the virus, and they are more aggressive and they are more, you know, virulent. Mm-hmm. And these, you know, if you think that we are in lockdown and you see that the numbers are not declining anymore, but start to increase already, then you know that the third wave is already coming. Yeah, still, all these scientists, all these epidemiologists, and I think also the statisticians are not able to convince the government to act accordingly. Yeah. And I think that is one of these reasons, one of these case studies where scientists, you know, fail on negotiating their point. They fail on convincing the others. And that actually leads very, very nicely to the books that we are talking about today.
It does. And you have chosen another fantastic book, Alexander, Never Split the Difference, by the chief negotiator, Chris Voss, is absolutely fantastic. It's one of these books that you just can't put down. And you told me about this, I wasn't sure. I bought the book, and when I got into it, it's one of these ones that you literally tear through. So thank you again.
It's one of the books that I also got recommended by my partner in crime, Gary Sullivan, who I'm doing the leadership program together. And it's a book that really nicely complements the getting to yes that we already talked about. Yeah, I think if you think about getting to yes as a negotiator's guide for gentlemen, then This is the book for the street smart people.
I've been thinking about this a lot. So I think Getting to Yes is a fantastic book, which gives you a really good base layer of negotiation skills. And I still, even though Never Split the Difference is very good, I would still recommend Getting to Yes, because in a business sense, and what I do in business development and in negotiating of contracts and working with outsourcing and contracts and proposal people, is those technical skills of getting people together to agree. Getting to Yes is still an excellent, excellent guide. And that best alternative to a negotiated agreement, that BATNA, is, you know, life skills. And I know we're not talking about Getting to Yes, but I think as a starter, I would always suggest reading that before you then want to Never Split the Difference. And I was talking to somebody quite senior in a pharmaceutical business yesterday, and he's read both books, and we agreed that Never Split the Difference is exciting, it's dynamic, it's got, you know, all the stories in it, whereas Getting to Yes is very technical and specific and useful in your everyday life. So
You see that it's, you know, the authoring team is very different, whereas Getting to Yes is really from, you know, Harvard University, kind of this academic style, whereas Getting to Yes is, the author is someone that negotiated for the FBI, for the CIA, that needed to convince people that are psychopaths. So people that held hostages and things like that. It's not kind of, you know, where I think the Harvard people, they had more kind of, kind of the US president talks to, you know, the Palestinian president and to the Israeli president, you know, and you talk about, you know, peace in that area, Whereas I think Chris Voss is coming from, I need to fly now over to South America and free, you know, 10 US citizens. And that's where the, you know, the title is coming from, Never Splits the Difference, because you can't just say, oh, you kill five and I take five home.
And I think that's really interesting, because when you go through the book, he gives you lots of like little conclusions and things to work on. But what I took from Never Split the Difference, and it's kind of later in the chapter, is he really negotiates hard. Yep. There is, if you like, one winner, and he kind of lets, through empathy and other techniques, the person that he's talking off the ledge, or who's about to, you know, hold up a bank, he's talking to these people, and he's really negotiating very hard, letting them feel that they're winning. And then there's another example where he goes in and negotiates the price of his car that he's about to buy, and he negotiates really hard and gets it for an amazing price that you kind of, both of us would think, oh my goodness me, that's very impressive. What I've been thinking about in a business way, if you were to conduct every negotiation that hard, you would find it hard to have a business in this pharmaceutical industry, because it would be very difficult for people to enter into a negotiation with you, knowing this sort of hard style. So although I loved, and I've taken down lots of points that hopefully we can unpick together, it is quite, it's quite hard. And I think, you know, I always think there's different things for different situations. I don't want to dilute the message, but I also take some of it with a little bit of a pinch of salt, you know.
Completely agree. I was also looking into this, and if you are after long-term relationships as well, then maybe, you know, this one thing you need to give And you need to make also sure that the other person, you know, takes something from it. Because, you know, if you're, let's say, you're working with a supplier and you always kind of win-win-win, yeah? At some point, the supplier will realize, well, there's no value in this relationship. I really need to get somewhere else here. Or you completely ruin my business. So,
Because I mean, going back to, you know, the car salesman, I mean, the car salesman he negotiated really hard with and came away with an amazing deal, massive price discount. That car salesman, he'll be glad that he's made a sale, but the owners of the car company will not be able to continue on that level of margin. And soon they'll kind of think, oh my goodness me, you know, if we get any more FBI negotiators coming in here to buy a car, we're going to be folding as a company. So there's a couple of things that I'm just going to unpick from the book.
Let's go into a couple of your recommendations, because I think the principles that he is recommending are really, really good. And you should be aware about them. Yeah. So what's your couple of key takeaways?
So a couple of big ones early on the book is slow down and really calm the conversation down and just take some time. Even when you think you're in like the most sort of hot situation, like he is negotiating with the bank robbers, just slow it and calm it down. And I think those words, particularly for somebody like me who, you know, likes, you know, very high throughput of work, you know, that sort of calming it down, slowing it down, actually sort of counter to how we normally operate. And I think that was really good. And then this mirroring. So if the person you're speaking to has a sort of a certain style, try to understand that style and reflect that. Now, that's very tricky because I think that's an easy thing to get wrong. But I did like that sort of sense of slowing it down. And then I'm just going to finish with this this late night DJ voice that he talks about. So this sort of calming voice effect that he has. And I guess that, you know, that was quite interesting as a technique. And then he goes into this sort of empathy, you know, really trying to understand, but it's tactical empathy and labeling things. So you're really exposing the key points. And I like that a lot. And then I'm going to jump forward a little bit. Big take home for me was these calibrated questions that you can use in a negotiation, which normally start with a how. And I've started to use this recently is, you know, when somebody's asked me to do something that's impossible, you respond with, well, how am I supposed to do that? How am I supposed to do that? And asking questions that can't simply be answered by a yes or a no. If you ask a how question, you can really stimulate a response. So those are just some of the early things I took. There's more. There's a lot more in there. But those are some of those early technique things that I took.
Yeah. So this how technique is really, really interesting. So imagine someone comes to you and makes a request. Like, I need these analysis by tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And you basically ask back, can you help me how I should can make that possible? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because usually our delivery time frame is, you know, 3 or 4 days. How can I make that possible to be it in one day?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that puts the onus back on the requester. Yeah. And that's a very, very interesting and easy technique, because it also shifts the problem from, oh, it's just my problem, to it's our problem or your problem, actually. Yeah, because you want something.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite bold, and it's quite a tough one, particularly if your boss There's a story in the book about a boss walking up to, I believe it's a secretary's desk, and saying, "I want 1,000 photocopies by the end of tomorrow." And, you know, her normal sort of stance would be yes, and then have to work through the night to get it done and be under a lot of pressure. And as she's working with Chris Voss, she actually says, "Well, how am I supposed to do that?" You know, that was like, you know, sort of pushing back. I'm paraphrasing now, but, you know, that's the sort of sentiment you get from this, and being quite intelligent with your question back at how, you know, am I supposed to do this? It's quite confrontational. So I guess you've got to kind of be ready for that. And then the boss goes away in this instant and, you know, says, well, you know, maybe you don't need all the photocopies, and kind of lessens the request. But it does require an amount of being bold and being brave with these techniques.
Yeah, but it's also easier than to say no. Yeah, so it's this kind of not going directly into yes or no, but, you know, trying to learn more about it as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so there's this other question is, what about this is important to you? Yeah. Mm. So understanding more about the background. Yeah. I think that he also earlier in the book speaks about the active listening.
Yeah. Yeah.
So to get more and more information from the other side, you need to be really, really good listener, and you need to ask questions. And I think that is always something great in negotiations if you can learn more about the other side. Yeah. I think that is also something that is in common with the getting to yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The more you understand the other person or the other side, the better for you, because that's, you know, then you can use it and reframe things. Yeah. So for example, with this table delivery, okay, you asked me for 20 different tables. What's important for you? Yeah, actually, I just need these two. The others can wait for another 3 weeks. Yeah.
Yes. I'm saying yes to your response. And in the book, it talks about don't be afraid of no. So if somebody does say no, that's kind of like the starter of the conversation, not the end of the conversation. And, you know, if I had like this urgent request where I needed, you know, some tables and listings, and I said, you know, I want them done, and then the answer is no, then the next question you go back with is, well, when, or, you know, what can we do? You know, then you kind of enter in to this sort of discussion. But people use no as a sort of a comfort blanket, and they're saying no because they're being taken out of their comfort zone. They don't believe they're able to do something, so they say no. And often people go, okay, they said no. And I'll get back to their boss and they said, well, I asked them and they said no. And actually what this book talks about is don't be afraid of no. In fact, that's the start. It's not a failure. That's the place where you start your negotiation. And I think you may be aware that I've come from a background where I've done a lot of cold calling in my time. And you have like these sorts of guides and tips. Some people have scripts, but in my time, it's always been like, you know, things that I've wanted to say, and you phone somebody up and they just say no, and you're like, huh, you know, you really feel, you know, wounded. And then the technique is overcoming objections and overcoming boundaries, and you're sort of schooled in, you know, what your next response is. But actually, when you think about it, no is an obvious thing. I mean, you just phone somebody up. They're not going to agree to something over the telephone. You'd be foolish if they did. So that no has to be, you know, sort of taken as the start of the negotiation, not the end, which I thought was absolutely fantastic. Really.
The other part in it, if you get a no from the other side, that's actually a good thing. Yeah, because the more often they say no, the harder it becomes to say no. So that's an interesting psychological thing. Yeah, that's also some of these, yeah, let's say more kind of street smart psychological games that you can play. Yeah, so it's not necessarily that, you know, no is directly a bad thing, especially if you made, you know, quite a bold request. Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, I think the in the book, he wants to get into negotiating. So he goes to, I don't know, negotiation school, and he says, you know, I want to build a team. And they say no. And then he's like, well, come on then, what do I need to do? And I guess she said, go and work on like one of these sort of Samaritan helplines, go work on one of those, you know, call centers to help people. And then he got the bit of information he needed to understand his next step in his career. Mm. So having the no then opened the how question. And I think that's, you know, that calming it down, looking at a sort of a longer trajectory of getting everything you need from an instantaneous call, you know, is a really good technique.
Another kind of these street smart techniques is bending their reality. It's kind of, that is, I think, probably, if you read this, watch out for these things when you go to your car salesman, because that is, I think, these are very, very often used, kind of anchoring their emotions. So you know, or let the other person go first. Yeah, you see that very often in salary discussions. What's your current salary? Yeah, it's, and then, you know, that's already kind of, you know, sets an anchor. You can, you know, set a range or and things like that. So there's always these, you know, psychological things. And that's where, when I read this, I was reminded of Daniel Kahneman's book, yeah, of all these kind of biases that we have and the slow and fast thinking. And these kind of bending the reality speaks really to these fast thinking, you know, so where we automatically, you know, respond to something without really logically thinking about it. Yeah, it becomes then kind of the norms, the standards, the anchors, and so these are also really, really interesting topics.
Yeah, I think the anchoring in a negotiation, there's that empathy that you're trying to use. And I thought that there was a part in the book about these kidnappers, and they are requesting huge sums of money. And what he's trying to get at is, well, actually, is it this huge sum of money that they're going to, you know, retire on for the rest of their life that they're after? Or is it, you know, a really fun weekend that they want to basically be able to have the money to spend on? And it's, which I thought was fascinating. I think all of us, when we think of sort of kidnapping, it's like the worst place you can go to in terms of sort of a negotiation. But he's there thinking, well, what is it that they really want here? You know, what is it that they're sort of truly after? So I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, that was an interesting story. I remember that as well, where, you know, there's this kind of environment where the hostages are held, where it's kind of a sport of certain local people to kidnap someone so that they have enough money for the next big party weekend.
Get drunk. No, crazy. Absolutely.
Crazy. Yeah. Awesome. But that is really an interesting part. Let's double click a little bit on the empathy side, because I think this is really important in all relationships. Yeah. If you are independent of whether you're in a negotiation or whether you just have a usual kind of business discussion, that is not even a negotiation. I think showing empathy and feeling, you know, reflecting on the feelings that the other person have. Yeah. Verbalize them. Yeah. Not just, you know, notice them, but verbalize them. Yeah. See kind of, oh, you look pretty busy and hectic at the moment. Yeah. Or you see, you know, is something wrong? Yeah. You look tired or something like this. Yeah. Or, looks like you feel really good today. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That really helps quite a lot to build a relationship and that, you know, to build trust because trust is really, really important for all these negotiations. Yeah. Because if there's no trust, then there's no really good agreement in the end.
Mm. Yeah. I think in the book, he talks about understanding who you're talking to. And I think he labels, is it the assertive, the analyst, and the accommodator, and the different types of people that you typically speak with. And a long silence from somebody might be, you know, if you're an assertive person like I am, when you get a long silence, you're thinking, oh, why are they not getting this? Why are they not moving? Whereas if you're an analyst, you know, you're just thinking, actually, I need to think about this. I really need to consider the whole thing before I just shoot back a response. And I'm not just going to give a response. I'm going to give you some silence. And that can be quite frustrating for different types of people coming together. So understanding those and understanding the type of person. So we talked a previous book, The Chimp Paradox, which I still think of as one of the most amazing books that I've read this year, in the sort of the different parts of the brain. And you've got this reactive fight or flight parts of your brain. And, you know, when people are communicating with each other, on what levels are they communicating? So when you sort of unpick that empathy piece, actually just think, oh, you know, this isn't just about me. This person needs to get what they want out of this as well, and really start to find common landing areas, spaces to speak on.
Yeah, yeah. So if you haven't listened to the podcast about the chimp paradox, just scroll a little bit back in your podcast player and search for that. And the one about getting to yes is even earlier in our series. Okay, let's talk a little bit about some other learnings. So what is, you know, some other takeaways that you have from the book?
I think actually this one's hard to articulate, but it's the difference between listening and hearing. So somebody can talk and you can just, you know, listen to them, and they're just talking and talking, and you're kind of listening and thinking that you're processing it. But if you're hearing them, there's certain things in what they are saying that you start to understand about the person, about what they are looking to achieve, about what they really want. Their desires, what is their real fundamental goals? And sometimes they're signaling them and telling me them in a very indirect way. So that hearing piece, understanding where somebody's come from, how they've been raised, what their religion is, what their belief systems are, what their anchors are, and really starting to actually hear those subtleties and then use those to fully understand. We're going back to the empathy again, I know, but it's more subtle, and it's more it's actually really difficult. It's not an easy thing, particularly fast moving text and email and you know, voice clip environment that we're living in at the moment, but to really hear what somebody is saying as opposed to just listening. So that I have been thinking about a lot.
Yep. So it's an awesome book. It's really entertaining. Yeah, it has lots of great stories in it. And as you can imagine, these kind of stories with hostages also sometimes go south. Yeah, so there's also, he learns from all these failures and, you know, why the FBI actually is failing instead of, even if they apply all these things and, he's learning through experience. And so it's really a great book to read. It's fun to read. It's actually, not that super long book. Yeah. And so I can only highly recommend it because you want to probably read it, again and again to learn about all these different tips and tricks in it. Because there's very often, a couple of different things like, these calibrating questions. He has a list of different things, or these bending the reality. There's a number of different ways you can do it. So also good if you just go into maybe your next salary negotiation or things like that. Yeah. Have it there and pick it from there. Any final word, Stuart?
Well, I think we will talk, I'm sure, about the Black Swan in the future. I think for me, this idea of, I don't want to spoil the book too much because, it's really worth reading. But I think the Black Swan as a topic is absolutely fascinating. Nobody ever believed that there was going to be a Black Swan. It was just, and then I think it was Australia, somebody came across a Black Swan. And that is an analogy for, as we were planning for business 2 years ago and you're looking and seeing, well, what can go wrong? What can happen? Nobody thought a global pandemic would such a strain across the industry or such a difficult scenario for people's livelihoods. So that for me is a black swan, just comes out. And then actually you can say, well, it's not a black swan. We've had pandemics in the past. We were very due one. It wasn't that long ago in our history, in our global history, that we've had these issues in the past. So actually, why do we think it's so unusual? And people who live in, live next to black swans probably think, why do people think this is so unusual? Maybe a white swan is unusual. So yeah, it's that sort of changing the mindset, I think, is a topic that maybe we can pick into in the future.
Yep. Very good. So keep on listening and check out the show notes for all the comments that we made and some further resources. This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain, who helps with the show in the background. And thank you for listening. Head over to theeffectivestatistician.com, where you will find the show notes, the link to the book, and lots of other stuff that helps you to boost your career as a statistician in the health sector. Reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.